Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is August 31st, 2004. Today's session number is DRP 2004-02. Today's speaker is Peter Drury. And the lesson for today is Vocation Discernment in the Bible and Today. Caller ID. Let's listen in.
Day two of Bible study. Some of you were here yesterday. Some of you were here for the first time, and both options are perfectly fine. We do every class at Holden, if you don't know it, every class is supposed to be designed to stand alone. So if someone's doing a series on something over five times, you only make one of them. It doesn't even matter if it's the last one. We always teach so that the sessions are standalone. So delighted for you to be here on day two, and we'd love to have you join us for the rest of the week. For those of you who are here for the first time today, we're looking at, there are five topics. Yesterday we talked about call waiting, and that's not the telephone. We talked about waiting and discerning a sense of call, and today is caller ID. So you might detect a theme. Tomorrow's voicemail, and Thursday is conference call, and Friday is call forwarding. So if you're able to be here for the whole series, it all runs together as one big package, but if you can only come for one of those, that's also just fine. My name's Peter, and you can call me that, and I'm just delighted once again to be here at Holden. It's a great joy, and love studying the scriptures with folks. We started off yesterday with a little bit of a song, and so those of you who I recognize as having been here yesterday, I know you remember this, but I'll just in case you don't remember it, I'll just sing it one time through. And then we're going to split between the men and the women. I think we're got a good enough division here, because we'll wind up doing it in a round. But it's Psalm 133, and the text in English is, "Behold how good and pleasant, or behold how good and lovely it is when sisters and brothers dwell together in unity." And the tune from the Jewish liturgy goes, "Hine matovu manaim shevet achim gam yachad. Hine matovu manaim shevet achim gam yachad. Hine mato shevet achim gam yachad. Hine mato shevet achim gam yachad." So it's the same words, basically. Hine mato umanayim shevet achim gam yachad. And this morning in the shower, I was singing that to myself. Because those of you who were here yesterday, you remember that. I surprised myself. I said, wait a second. When you do the one that goes, you don't say umanayim. So I had to think about it, because I've been saying this too long. And hine is behold, and matov is how great or how good. And umanayim, the u is and manayim is how pleasant. So the first time when you sing, for those of you who are kind of linguistically intrigued, when you sing that, hine matov umanayim, you're saying how good and pleasant it is when sisters and brothers dwell together in unity. And when you do the one above, it's like saying, behold how good it is when sisters and brothers, you leave out the pleasant, and I think it's just because of the amount of notes. But yesterday I was so puzzled, I thought you'd do the exact same thing, but you leave it out. So, Maria, can I invite you to come forward, and I'm going to have the men join me. We'll all sing it together once, all the way through. Now the men join me, and the women join Maria. Thank you. So let's all, and the words are, hine macho, say that after me, hine macho,
hine macho,
u manaim. Shevet Achim.
Shevet Achim.
Gam Yachad.
Gam Yachad.
And as I said yesterday, just throw a few in there, and it works. So let's all sing it one time through with all the repeats and everything, then we'll break into rap. Hine matovu manayim,
Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. Hine matovu manayim, Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. Hine Mato Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. Hine Mato Shevet Achim Gam Yachad.
So do you want to start with women?
Sure.
Hine Mato Manayim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. Hine matovu manayim, shevet achim gam yachad.
Hine matovu
And as I said yesterday, this will be the last thing I'll repeat, basically, but as I said yesterday, it's really important that we live into the scriptures. We talk about reading the scriptures, but I like to say it's important that we live into the scriptures in context. That text is in context, and the psalms were songs and poems. And so that was not the tune that was, no one knows the tune that was used for Psalm 133. But that is a tune that has been used for hundreds of years in synagogues for that psalm. So, about the best we can do. But text and context, such a critical theme. And so I invite you in your life and your approach to the Bible to experience the scripture more so than to read it. I think when we read it, we immediately lose a lot. Shall we open in prayer? Holy One of Blessing, we give you thanks and praise for this beautiful day and place and community and for your tremendous world in which you call us to be stewards. Help us, O God, to uplift your sense of peace, of hope, of reconciliation, and of growth. Teach us, O God, to fly. Thanks be. Through your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
And I'm going to ask Roy if I might borrow your wristwatch again.
You're right.
I like to honor time, and we'll wrap up by about 9:45, so I'm happy to stick around for questions after that time if you want to, but I like to let people kind of go if they need to. There's a coffee break kind of afterward and all that, so don't worry, we'll honor that. I also said yesterday, here's one more repeat, is that I'm learning PowerPoint. And don't worry, there's about 5 slides. Like, it's not, I'm not into gizmos and stuff, but I'm learning, and it's kind of fun to learn. And as I just think it's nice to offer you a view of Copper Basin, because you're inside on a beautiful morning, and I know that you, but I'd love to be sitting on the Ark just looking at Copper Basin. We're going to review a couple of quick things from yesterday. See, I lied, I would repeat myself. I'm not going to repeat, but we're going to review. Caller ID is the question of, how do I know that it's God who's calling? Right? So yesterday we talked about kind of waiting, waiting on God to discern. But when we are discerning, when we are listening, when we are seeking, how do we know we're not just listening to an inner voice, which is not a bad thing, but I mean, how do we know that we're not listening to an inner voice? How do we know we're not listening to a voice of selfishness? Or we're not listening to a, I don't know, some vacant part of ourselves, some vacuum that we're trying to fill in. You know, maybe we have this box-sized hole that we're trying to, you know, fit in with a circle that we're trying to call God somehow. Or how do we know that we're not listening to old tapes from our childhood, from family? You know, do people know Anne Lamott, who wrote like Bird by Bird and Traveling Mercy? She has this great quote. She says, and I won't get it exactly, but this is the basic gist of Anne Lamott. She says, you can make a pretty good guess that you have created God in your own image. Think about that for a second, right? I mean, it's God who was supposed to have created us in God's image. You can make a pretty good guess that you've created God in your own image when God hates all the same people you do. How do we know that we're listening to God and we're not listening to our own deep psychology that then we are portraying onto God? Are you with me? Or, you know, how do we know we're not doing our own PowerPoint of our own stuff and projecting it on a screen and calling it God? Is it you, Lord? How do I know if you're the one who's calling? Caller identification. We're going to look at a couple folks' calls today in the Bible. They're not the only 2 calls in the Bible. There are many. But these are going to be 2. Yesterday we talked about named a few people who maybe hadn't even heard of or read about for many years. But today we're going to look at a couple of folks who, if you've ever heard anything from the Bible ever, these will be 2 recognizable names. You probably know at least a little bit about their story. They should be familiar stories of call. And we're going to look a little bit at how they responded to a call. I'd like to begin by reading something from the Way of the Chongzi. And I may not be pronouncing that correctly, but the Way of the Chongzi, Chuangtzu. It's called the Woodcarver. And as I did with the poem yesterday, I will read this a second time. There's a lot in it, and I know that I will miss some of it when I go. So relax and listen to the story. Don't worry, you'll hear it a second time. King, the master carver, made a bell stand of precious wood. When it was finished, all who saw it were astounded. They said it must be the work of spirits. The Prince of Lu said to the master carver, "What is your secret?" King replied, "I am only a workman. I have no secret. There is only this. When I began to think about the work that you commanded, I guarded my spirit, did not expend it on trifles that were not to the point. I fasted in order to set my heart at rest. After 3 days of fasting, I had forgotten gain and success. After 5 days, I had forgotten praise or criticism. After 7 days, I had forgotten my body with all its limbs. By this time, all thought of your highness and of the court had faded away. All that might distract me from the work had vanished. I was collected in the single thought of the bell stand. Then I went into the forest to see the trees in their own natural state. When the right tree appeared before my eyes, the bell stand also appeared within it, clearly, beyond doubt. All I had to do was put forth my hand and begin. If I had not met this particular tree, there would have been no bell stand at all. What happened? My own collected thought encountered the hidden potential in the wood. From this live encounter came the work which you ascribe to spirit. Read that again. King, the master carver, made a bell stand of precious wood. When it was finished, all who saw it were astounded. They said it must be the work of spirits. The Prince of Lu said to the master carver, "What is your secret?" King replied, "I am only a workman. I have no secret. There is only this. When I began to think about the work that you commanded, I guarded my spirit, did not expend it on trifles that were not to the point. I fasted in order to set my heart at rest. After 3 days of fasting, I had forgotten gain and success. After 5 days, I had forgotten praise or criticism. After 7 days, I had forgotten my body with all its limbs. By this time, all thought of your highness and of the court had faded away. All that might distract me from the work had vanished. I was collected in the single thought of the bell stand. Then I went to the forest to see the trees in their own natural state. When the right tree appeared before my eyes, the bell stand also appeared within it, clearly, beyond doubt. All I had to do was to put forth my hand and begin. If I had not met this particular tree, there would have been no bell stand at all. What happened? My own collected thought encountered the hidden potential in the wood. From this live encounter came the work which you ascribe to spirits." The woodcarver. I'm going to invite us into a little exercise for a moment, and that is, and don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to call anything out loud. So I'm about to ask you some questions to think about, but I will absolutely not ask you to share these answers. It's not big, personal, deep stuff, but just, I want you to know when you think about the question, you don't have to come up with a clever answer, a smart answer, the most unique answer in Holden Village, right? You don't have to, you're not showing off. You also don't have to, you know, just nothing comes. But I would like you to, and I'm going to give you a moment of silence to really think about this. I'd like you to think, if you were forced to come up with three kind of essential qualities of God, and of course there's so many qualities of God, but three qualities of God that really speak to you. Doesn't matter to me why they speak to you right now, but just somehow they speak to you. Maybe they speak to you today in the present moment. Maybe they spoke to you as a child and you're trying to recover it. You had to come up with three. Now don't worry, if you count to four or five, fabulous. I'm not going to limit you to three. But I'd like to take a moment in silence to just bounce around the many qualities of God and try to come up with about three that, for whatever reason, just really speak to you. And we'll take a few minutes for silence. Concepts alive in your mind and in your heart through the remainder of this hour. And they might shift and change 10 minutes from now. You might realize, oh yeah, I left out, you know, such and such. We're going to talk about these in the context of discernment. But I might also just toss out, there's a little message in here in terms of contemplative prayer. And that is, for those of you who are seeking, you know, if it's ever occurred to you, and probably none of you deal with this, but if you've ever kind of wondered, gee, how do I pray? You're probably not. You all know. But if you're ever kind of just wondering a little bit, you know, how do I... Sometimes just coming back to sitting in silence, you might name aloud or within your mind those qualities, and then just be with them. Just simply be with those qualities of God. A good 20 minutes in silence being with those. That change your whole day, might change your whole life. This is kind of, this is where we're going with this. I'd like to talk about the concept of resonance. Terms of caller ID, and you'll say, resonance. Do you know, if I went over to this piano right now, and if I stuck my foot on the damper pedal, you know what's on the damper pedal is? So like, if I play the piano, usually, the notes end, right? But if I put the damper pedal down, right, they carry on. Did you know that if I have my foot on the damper pedal, and I don't touch a note, and if I blow a trumpet, into this. In fact, I could probably just do it. There's too much stuff on the piano. If I had a... You know what? I'm just going to do it. Maria, will you come sing a note into the piano for us? Or somebody else. I mean, I ask her because I know you, but it, you know, Roy's got a big booming voice. Someone to come just... I want you to boom.
Just get Roy to sing a note.
I want you to sing. I'm going to have my foot on the damper pedal, and why don't you just... Okay, so now all the strings are open. There's, because see, the damper, what that does is it sets a damper down on the strings. So now the strings are free. You're just singing. Ah. You hear? I'm going to do the damper. Do, now this time go like twice as much volume and sing a different note. Totally different note. If I did that and blew a trumpet into here, right? Can I do one more just for fun?
Why
don't
I hold the
band? Okay. So men, in terms of this, and I gotta go.
I gotta pretend to be a bass.
Okay. Get that
note? Love.
I did several there because of vibrato, right? But when it comes to listening for the voice of God and wondering, thanks. To wondering, you know, are we really listening to God? I think the concept of resonance might fit in here. Think of ourselves, for example, like strings. Strings that are free. Right? Strings that are absolutely free. So that when God sounds her own voice, that we might resonate with that tone. Is this making sense? That, so for example, let's just say, sometimes people will say to me, I talked about a kind of a fundamentalist preacher yesterday out in front of our church, and a lot of times fundamentalists, people have kind of accused me or our church of being too liberal with our biblical interpretation or whatever, and I come back and I say something simple, like, you know, here's how I see it. Jesus was once asked, what's the most important commandment? And he said it's this, love God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. So I encourage parishioners that when you're reading the Bible and interpreting the Bible, you know, if someone's telling you to interpret the Bible in a way that isn't consistent with loving God with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself, then you've got an idea that you're probably not interpreting it consistently with the will of God. And you have to be very careful here. When you talk about will of God, I'm not qualified. I can't say the will of God. And I think if we ever kind of propose to say that we can interpret perfectly the will of God, we're stepping over some really inappropriate boundaries. But you remember discernment from yesterday. Those of you who are here. Discernment has to do with sifting. Sifting, to separate out through sifting. And so when we're trying to listen for the voice of God, it's not like we're choosing in a multiple choice, okay, there's A, B, C, or D, which one of these, it's a quiz, is God's voice. It's more like in our prayerful life, in our scriptural life, that we're sifting, right? To try to separate out, to draw a distinction, to come closer to where is God calling us. That if, for example, your interpretation and your prayer is leading you inconsistently with loving God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbors, yourself, you're probably not on the right path. Does that make sense? Okay. So you take that concept now, I'd like you to apply that to the qualities of God, the silent exercise we just had, and the sense of the qualities of God that are really speaking to you right now. When you are in discernment, when you're in active discernment around vocation, I would invite you to focus upon those qualities of God which really speak to you right now. And then to attempt to make your life free enough that you might resonate with those qualities of God. Does that make sense? I'm not sure. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So really quickly, this is a picture from the Tazay community, by the way. We're going to integrate some photos over Maria and my sabbatical that's kind of wrapping up right now. Yesterday we had photos from around the village and such. And this is from Tazay. Discerning, I purposely didn't define it. I wanted to give some related words because I think we're working on a definition together. But it has something to do with perceiving, distinguishing, and knowing. In Latin, it would be really appropriate to translate to separate by sifting. And here's your etymology. And the second word that we're working with here, we're discerning something specifically. Vocation. This is not from Tazay. This is from France, not far from Tazay, in a cloister in Saint-Emilion. We're talking about discernment in terms of vocation. Vocation being voice, calling, a way of work, a way of being, way of doing, ministry, from the Latin vocatio, calling or summoning, to call, a voice. So I'd like us to look at two biblical figures who you've maybe heard about. Anybody heard of either Mary or Moses or both? Don't worry, yesterday we kind of mentioned Susanna, Hannah, Zacchaeus, a few of you know. But we're going to talk about Mary and Moses. Okay, we got people have Bibles, many of you. You're not required to. You know, this is not a Bible. I'd like us to go to Luke 1, and it's nice to read this in the off season. This is the call of Mary. We're going to be in Luke 1, 26 through 38. Luke 1, 26 through 38. If you're not sure where that is, I'm happy to help you find it. In my Bible, it's about this far through. But it's early in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, third gospel in the beginning. Luke 1, 26 through 38. Now, yesterday we did something with reading a scripture that I thought worked really well, and that was, if you would like to read one verse of this out loud in succession, if you feel called to read a verse aloud, go for it. We just kind of went popcorn style around the room. It's kind of a nice group reading the scripture. I'll read the first verse, and then if someone wants to, I'll start in 26, and if someone picks up in 27, and someone comes in on 28, let's hear this story. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee called Nazareth.
He had a message for a girl promised in marriage to a man named Joseph, who was descendant of King David. The girl's name was Mary.
And he came to her and said, "Greetings, favored one. The Lord is with you."
But she was much perplexed by his words, inquired what sort of greeting this might be.
The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God.
And now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus.
He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give to him the throne of his ancestor David.
He will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end."
"How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin."
The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God."
"And now your relative Elizabeth, in her old age, has also conceived a son, and this is the sixth month for her who was said to be barren.
For nothing will be impossible with God."
Then Mary said, "Here am I, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word." Then the angel departed from her.
Thank you. What did you notice about just Mary's response? What was her first kind of response when this angel first appeared?
Fear? Confusion?
Trouble? I love that word, perplexed. We don't get that a lot in the Bible. She was perplexed. Fear, trouble. And then her reaction grows to become something else. Then what's her reaction?
Kind of discerns.
Okay.
Questioning.
Yeah. Why is it?
Wait, disbelief. Disbelief? None of you have ever kind of had that, like, you know, when you're kind of praying and thinking about what you should do. None of this disbelief, fear, perplex. I said yesterday, you know, it is truly not just a liberal interpretation, modern era, touchy-feely, oh yeah, you can, you know, you can waver in your call and there's a lot of options. I mean, Mary had been wavering, didn't she? Just go right to it. I mean, this is Mary we're talking about, right? I mean, if you've got a candidate for someone who responded to a call in the Bible, it's Mary, and she's perplexed. What else did we say? Fearful, wavering, questioning.
Disbelief.
Okay, this is Mary now. What else? Where does this move to? Where does this...
Accepting.
Submission.
Accepting and submission. I like the word yield. In fact, when Marie and I were traveling in Ireland as part of our sabbatical, one of the great things, you see these street signs, and one of the great ones actually in Scotland is this sign you're driving along, you see a sign that says heavy plant crossing. And you know, you kind of picture this huge philodendron, you know, trying to work its way across. And what it means, of course, it's kind of like the same as like trucks entering the roadway. You know, you're like by a plant, some kind of a physical thing, and there's truck. Heavy plant crossing. Well, the one that then also really stood out to us, both in Ireland and Scotland, you're racing along and you're going to come up toward a rotary, and you're going the wrong way. I mean, this is the rotary around the left side because you're driving on the wrong side of the road. And the sign says traffic calming. Have you ever traveled in the UK and seen that traffic calming? And that kind of means lanes are merging and it's slow. And I thought, you know, in Seattle we could really use some traffic calming. How about your city? We can use some traffic calming. There's some yielding going on, right? I love a yield sign. In a certain sense, Mary yields. I mean, submission today, I mean, I think that in an ancient sense of the term, submission kind of works, but today I think we hear submission with some different ears, and appropriately we ought to be, that's a suspect term, I think. But yielding, listen to this. Right after this thing about nothing will be impossible with God, kind of a nice little piece thing, or nothing will be impossible with God, then Mary said, "Here am I, servant of the Lord, let it be with me according to your word." See, that strikes me like being a freed up string on a piano or a violin or a guitar or a cello. Freed up so that when God's tone comes over you, comes over Mary, that she had placed herself in a position to yield, to respond to that quality of God. Resonance. There are other things, but resonance. I'll come back to that in a second, but let's now go back to Moses, Exodus chapter 3. That's in the early books of the Bible, in the first five. I'll tell you what page it was on in mine, but we've got a different version. So Exodus 3, verses 1 through 12. Exodus 3, 1 through 12. Give me a second to get there, and we'll just do the same thing again. That was lovely. Thank you for reading. It's kind of nice to just hear multiple voices as we hear the scriptures. Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. Again, I'll read the first verse, and we'll go from there. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God.
There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed.
This is strange, he thought. Why isn't the bush burning up? I will go closer and see.
When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses," and he said, "Here I am."
"Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground."
He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God.
Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings. And I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and bring them out of that land to a good broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the
Hivites,
Jebusites.
The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them.
So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt.
But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?"
He said, "I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain."
Thank you. Okay, so talk to me about Moses and his call and his response.
Curiosity.
Reluctance.
Surprise.
I don't seem like the right guy.
Yeah. Who am I? That's God's response. I love this. Do you notice that? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And how does God respond?
I'll be with you.
God answering the question that Moses asked?
It's like, you're right, you're not much. I'll be there.
It's not about you, it's about me.
Yeah, that's right. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And God says, I will be with you. That's Emmanuel in Hebrew. Emmanuel, God with us God. We say God, what do we see in the we say things like God shall be with you, or how do we translate that in the New Testament? We say no, but we in the New Testament, how they say Emmanuel, which means God is with us, right? You'll see that in the New Testament. In Hebrew, Immanuel, Emmanuel, one word. It's three words glued together. Im, Anu, El. Im is with. Anu is short for Anachnu, which means us. And El is the beginning of Elohim, for God. So it's this glued together word that means the with us God. To me, it loses something when we say, which means, you know, God is with you. I mean, it's nice and everything. But Emmanuel is the with us God. So, you know, here's this passage. You know, there's another place related to this story where, just a little later, where Moses says, well, who shall I say sent me? And how does God respond?
With us, God.
No, God says, tell them I am. Right? I am who I am. Who am I? With us, God. Who shall I tell them sent me? I am. I mean, God is answering questions on a whole different plane, right? A whole different plane. Sometimes the point's about who we are, but it's also about being resonant with who God is. The reason I asked you to kind of go through in silence and consider some of those qualities that really speak to you is I believe as firmly as I believe there's a floor that I'm standing on, that there are so many magnificent qualities to God that I couldn't tell you for a minute. Couldn't tell you for a minute how to interpret a quality of God for you that's going to help you understand if God's the one who's at the other end of the telephone line, right? But I do believe that God works in our lives in ways that we gain information about how we respond to the holy, and then in opening ourselves up to holiness, then we're able to live in to where we're called. So since I can't do that for you, I couldn't say to you this morning, okay, think of three things, justice, hope, and love, let's say. But those are perfectly nice things. You know, but maybe your words were spirit, mercy, and art with a capital A. Right? And if I had said justice, hope, and love, that wouldn't work for you. You just have to keep in mind what Anne Lamott said about creating God in your own image. Because obviously, if your three words for God are, you know, wealth, abundance, and selfishness, I mean, there may be another problem you need to work on before the discernment one. But considering that you got a good sense of some qualities of God, you're the one who knows in your life how those speak. Looking at Mary and Moses, both of them, as you compare and contrast those a little, any notice things, anything just stand out to you as you hear those stories right now?
I guess my question is, both of them, an angel came to them. And I mean, if I had an angel come to me, I think it would be easier to discern.
Great question. I'd love to, I want to ask for other responses, but I want, that's what I was specifically hoping somebody would ask a question like that. Now, in Mary's case, there's an angel and it's really clear. And in the Moses story, it's more of a voice than an angel, right? And I'm thinking, I don't know this for sure, but I'm thinking, this is oral tradition we're talking about. I mean, the scriptures are oral tradition. These stories were told for generations before they were written down. Now, I've got no problems with that an angel appeared to Mary. I think there's at least an inkling of a chance that this conversation that Moses had with God might have been an internal one. And then in the telling of the story, you know, well, Moses heard a voice, and that, you know, I mean, yeah, there was a burning bush, and, you know, I mean, you play with this stuff, and maybe, you know, maybe it was really burning bush, maybe it's a metaphor. You know, there's a lot of stuff around that, and not important to me whether you interpret that literally or not. I kind of like the burning bush image. I have no problem with being literal about a burning bush that was not consumed. But maybe that's something of an internal conversation with Moses once he comes across a burning bush. I haven't seen a burning bush, but I've stood on a bridge and looked down to water rushing underneath me, and I've been swept up into it so that my sense of reality changes. And I have a God moment. I have some spirit time. Think about that. When you're looking at some glorious view and you get, I don't know where those places are for you. I haven't seen a burning bush, but I've sure been in places where I was able to listen to God in a different way. There's a story that's told of a girl who goes out to the woods to pray. And her mom says, why do you go out to the woods to pray? Don't you know that God's the same everywhere? I mean, you could pray in the living room, you could pray in church, you can pray in the woods, God's the same everywhere. And the daughter says, well, gee, Mom, I know that God's the same everywhere, but I'm not the same everywhere. I'm not the same everywhere. And she goes to the woods to pray because that's where she's able to be freed up. Freed up to resound. Well, if you'll let me tell a story, I'd like to see if I can't bring some focus to this. One of my favorite places in the world, other than Holden Village, is the Pike Place Market in Seattle. Any of you been to Pike Place Market? Many of you? You know, if you walk by, there's a certain place in the market you walk by and you smell kind of cinnamon, fresh bread. I think they actually have a fan that like blows that out, of, you know, because I think they want you, you know, it's a little marketing campaign. But you walk along, and people set the vegetables up in such beautiful, you know, the vegetables and the fruit, and these beautiful arrangements. I used to live down near the Pike Place Market, and the best thing about that, I mean, there were a lot of negatives to living in downtown, I suppose, but one of the best things was, is I love the market. But what I love about Pike Place Market is a Tuesday or a Wednesday in the middle of winter when it's foggy and drizzly, when there's like barely anybody else in the market in the morning. See, most people know Pike Place Market in the summertime on a Saturday or a Friday afternoon, and you're going to get flowers, and the place is packed. But I loved a morning in the market, 7 o'clock, even 8, because the vegetables, they don't actually set the vegetables up as early as you think. I used to think you had to get to the market at like 5 or 6. If you get there at 5 or 6, it's boring. I mean, there's just empty tables out there. 7, 8, kind of by 9, the fruit and the vegetables are out. Walk along, the drizzle and the fog, somebody setting up their candles to sell, there's somebody getting their hot dogs ready at the hot dog stand down the way, someone's selling donuts. Well, there was this one morning, it was one of these kinds of days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, something in the middle of the week, it was kind of foggy and drizzling. I'm walking into the market, and I would tend to go along the same path into the market each time, and I would pass by folks who I recognized, and because I hang around in the city a bit, and since I serve an urban congregation, I have the good fortune of knowing a lot of folks who are in a hard way in their life, homeless folks, folks struggling in a lot of ways, and so often if I'm walking early in the morning, I'll see folks who I recognize and I've known for some years, not well, but I've learned that one of my spiritual disciplines is to say hello and to ask how someone's doing as opposed to just walk on by. So I recognized some folks that morning, and I also noticed there was one person in particular who was just laying flat out, as you sometimes see. You know, I don't know if it was too much to drink or they'd gotten beaten up or what, but there was somebody I recognized who was just in a bad way. And I remember that morning, I usually think of myself as a deeply hopeful person. Hope is just somehow deep in my constitution. And I remember on that morning, I was not feeling hopeful. I remember having this sense that the next person I passed by who was in a desperate situation, that it wouldn't be very satisfying to them if they asked me, you know, hey, have you got any spare change? And if I said, you know, just yesterday I made a tax-deductible contribution to a nonprofit organization that serves the needs of the marginalized and oppressed. I mean, that wouldn't have done anything for them. It would not have helped if I had said, did you know that I serve on the board of an organization that... It's not what folks are looking for. And I also realized, because I've talked to enough folks in recovery, a journey I honestly value so much. I'm stunned by the lives of people in recovery. I've learned enough to know you don't just hand cash out. Because, yeah, someone might want an apple, someone might want a sandwich. If you want someone to get food, you say, hey, come join me, let's sit down and, you know, eat lunch with them. But if you hand out cash, you always risk that that's going to a substance that just helps them go down and not up. I've learned enough about that that I felt kind of bound. I felt like I couldn't give cash, wasn't sure what to do, and so usually a fairly hopeful person, I really was kind of feeling discouraged and had this sense of, you know, even if I could, you know, do something nice for one person, it would, you know, really, on the massive scale of the pain in the universe, what can I really do here? So I just kind of walked along, and in my melancholy, I kind of did my shopping, and I knew there was some, walked past the fish throwers, and there was some seafood. I think I was getting some scallops that day, if I remember right. and got some vegetables. Might have even bought a candle. Kind of went around through the market, did my thing. Suddenly this guy just jumps out in front of me. I don't know where he came from, on the block. And he's got two huge handfuls of bananas. And he says, hey, do you want these for a dollar? And it's almost like a cartoon. I didn't know where this guy came from. And I thought, a bunch of bananas for a dollar. Well, I did not need, you know, like two dozen bananas. I had no need for two dozen bananas. I mean, banana bread, kind of. I had these visions dancing in my head of banana bread, right? But it was for a dollar. You know, I thought, do I walk by this guy? Well, clearly, these were kind of some bruised, but they were bananas from yesterday, or they're a little bruised. And, you know, he's got to put the really elegant, beautiful bananas on the stand. And so, before I knew it got a hold of me, I just said, yes, sure, I'll buy it. Found a dollar. Now, I got the scallops and the candle. I kind of put in some plastic bags in my hands. I got one. Bananas. I got one. Two dozen bananas. So I'm kind of thinking about banana bread and other possibilities, and I'm walking along. And the next person who asked me for spare change, I just kind of grabbed a banana, peeled it off, and said, hey, no, but here's a banana. And they kind of chuckled, but I think they were grateful. And another block down, I found myself, I'd given away 2, 3, 4, 5 bananas. And it kind of started to become fun. You know, I'm suddenly the banana guy. I'm walking down. I'm kind of feeling... I was feeling kind of melancholy and unhelpful and not hopeful before, and kind of giving some bananas. And you know, when I got home, I'm kind of pulling out my bags and all this stuff, so I kind of set my scallops and my asparagus and the candle, whatever I've got. And I've got 2 bananas left, and it's exactly what I needed. I didn't need any more than 2 bananas. That said something to me about God. And that morning in the market changed my spiritual life. Not because I read the right text, not because I was in the right mood, not because I was more spiritually mature than anybody else. I was actually at one of my least hopeful, helpful moments. I was shopping for me. Probably trying to cook a dinner for Maria or something when we were dating. That morning changed my spiritual life. Question of how do we know if it's God who's calling has a whole lot to do with resonance, has a whole lot to do with yielding, has a whole lot to do with being honest about what we can't do. And then allowing God to be with us, to work through us, and to call us to be. May Christ be in your steps and also in mine. Have a great day. Pictures of Assisi, if you want to see them.
Oh.
You want to know what St. Francis looked out to when he was saying? This would be one of St. Francis's views. I meant to, I'm so, like, what do I know about PowerPoint? But I was so moved by Assisi. So St. Francis was hanging around. This would be the kind of, I mean, not the buildings, obviously, but the kick is right over here is this huge basilica of St. Francis. I can't get over how, has any of you been to Assisi? Okay, so St. Francis is like the king of simplicity, right? Well, Rome, and I don't want to, I got to be careful here, because I'm an ecumeniac. I love the unity of the church. But somebody in Rome, I don't know who, wanted a huge basilica to be built in honor of St. Francis. In fact, it's one of two. There's another one downhill. You can't see, it's kind of off to this side. It has nothing to do with St. Francis. But you do if you go deep into, I encourage you, if you ever go to Assisi and you're in this Basilica of St. Francis, go down into the basement. There's a place where there's actually a little display. And you have to, like, work to find this place. I mean, what most people do is see all the beautiful paintings from the Renaissance and all this stuff, this incredible basilica. But deep down in the basement, you'll see some garments that St. Francis actually wore. And they're, like, old, holy, with holes, I mean, burlap sacks. I mean, that's St. Francis. And the most important thing for me in being in Assisi wasn't seeing the Basilica of St. Francis, but I love just kind of getting a sense of a view he might have had. So that's a view out from Assisi, and then this is a view of Assisi from below looking back. So.